We can activate them all via the implants that have been in place for a long time and which work like amplifiers. Something will happen to all of you at Christmas too, you will be activated. Sandra. Was your dream just a dream or more? Raina. No, it was not a dream. We brought Sandra and treated her. You was told about it in a dream. We carried out a treatment to take away all her, Sandra's, fears. This dream is described later in the book. Karen. What was that being that I saw on the same night as Sandra? Raina. It was Akan, it is your brother. He comes from Aldebaran and is currently stationed on Mars. Your soul has volunteered to incarnate here. You still needs intensive treatment, one side of him believes, the other side does not want to accept yet. Don't be surprised if he wakes up on Christmas distraught. Karen. What did that mean, what was said on the answering machine in 1995? Raina. It was made by us to send you a message. Rewa is the station on Mars, that's where the interpreters are. Karen. What is the function of the little greys? Raina. They have not been active since the summer of 1995. Their experiments are over. Their queen has asked me to thank you. They have returned to their home planet Nemo, which is in the constellation Orion. They have taken their children with them and want to build a new life on their home planet. It was your free will to help them to prevent their race from dying out. Nothing in the universe happens by chance, but has been planned and carried out for eons. But now we have to take care of the Earth and humanity. Unfortunately, there is no salvation for many people because they cling too tightly to their material world and are not ready to open up to the new world. Karen. Who was the being that stood in front of our garden gate? Raina. That was an emissary from us called Siwa. She was watching your house while you were in Zurich at the UFO Congress. Sometimes we visit people, but we have to be very careful because we are often shot at by satellites. America has extraterrestrial technology. They have set up a well-designed defense system around the Earth's orbit. With that they broke the trance. Somehow they felt that it was better for them. You never know exactly when other forces want to sneak in. They were amazed that after every question, the answer came out of Raina immediately without thinking. Raina also speaks reasonably good standard German during the trance sessions, which is very difficult for him in his waking consciousness with his broad Swabian accent. One cannot say with 100% certainty whether the information really comes from the Aldebarans. Part of it may also come from his subconscious. It cannot be ruled out that a little wishful thinking may creep in. So let's just assume it as it was told here. Everything has its meaning and we are only beginning to recognize, to know. And this knowledge is so great that we probably wouldn't even be able to understand it and therefore wouldn't be able to accept it. Apparently, it is only given to us in small pieces. In retrospect, once the puzzle has been completely filled in and the whole picture becomes clear, we will probably all have to laugh because the whole scenario was much simpler than we had imagined. We had all just allowed ourselves to be confused, not following our inner voice, not believing and trusting, but often doubting. But we are still in the middle of it. Let's see if we can get some new insights from the following chapters. Chapter 11, The Vril Society. In order to better understand what we will learn about Aldebaran and its inhabitants in the later chapters, I would like to add a very important component here. These are events in the past, in the German past, that are of great importance and probably represent the most important key to the events of the last 50 years on Earth. My readers will already know a large part of this chapter, but a few new aspects have been added that give the whole thing even more foundation. I have gathered most of the information presented here from eyewitnesses, or still living members of the Thule Society, the research of Mr. X, and from documents from the British Secret Service. All of these people understandably have no interest in being named. I would like to point out briefly beforehand that I am not listing this chapter to glorify the Third Reich. The people mentioned in this chapter were members of the Vril Society, which was itself banned by the National Socialists during the Third Reich. Before 1919, the Gurdjieff student and Tibet traveler Karl Haushofer founded a second order alongside the Thule Society, the Brothers of the Light, which was later renamed the Vril Society. This also united the Templar New Formation, the Gentlemen of the Black Stone, DHVSS, which emerged from the Germanic Order in 1917, and the Black Knights of the Thule and SS Elite Black Sunday to make a comparison with the Thule Society. The easiest way to understand the difference is to say that the Thule Society was devoted to material and political matters and the Vril Society was essentially oriented towards the other world. But there were still numerous points of contact between Vril and the Thule Society, such as Atlantis, Thule, the Island of the Blessed of Gilgamesh, the original connection between Germania and Mesopotamia, but also ancient sanctuaries such as the Externstein, the Untersberg or the local mountain of Stroneg. In December 1919, a close circle of Thule, DHVSS and Vril people met in a rented forest house in Ramsor near Birchtesgaden. Among them, in addition to the medium Marie Orsic, was another who is known only as Sigrun. Nord.link on them, Maria had received messages in a Templar secret script through a mediumistic means, a language completely unknown to the medium with telepathic information for the construction of a flying machine. According to the Vril writings, the telepathic messages came from the Aldebaran solar system, which is 68 light years away from us in the constellation of Taurus. At this point I would like to present a brief summary of the messages that the Vril telepathists received over the years and which formed the basis of all further actions of the Vril Society. The Aldebaran solar system is said to be 68 light years away from the Earth and its sun is orbited by two inhabited planets that form the kingdom of Sumerun. The humanity of the Aldebaran solar system is said to have divided into a people of tall and spiritually advanced people, who represent the actual and ruling population of Aldebaran, and various other human races that have developed through negative mutations of the highly developed, grown Aldebarans, are said to have developed as a result of the climatic changes on the individual planets. These colored mutated races are said to have had a lower level of intellectual development. The more racial mixing there was, the more the intellectual development of these peoples is said to have declined, which meant that when the sun Aldebaran began to expand, they were no longer able to maintain the space travel technology of their ancestors in order to leave the planets independently. Thus, the mutated races, completely dependent on the race of the large Aldebarans, are said to have been evacuated in spaceships and taken to other habitable planets. Despite these racial differences, however, the various races are said to have absolutely respected each other and not interfered in each other's living space. Neither the large, light-skinned Aldebarans with the other races, nor the other way around. Everyone simply respected that the others were developing in their own way, in contrast to Earth. The tall Aldebaranians are said to have started colonizing other Earth-like planets around 500 million years ago. It is said that in our solar system they first settled on the planet Malona, also called Maldk, Marduk or Phaeton by the Russians, which, instead of today's planetoids, is said to have existed between Mars and Jupiter. Then Mars, whose highly developed inhabitants are evidenced by the large pyramid cities and the famous face on Mars, which were photographed by the Viking Mars probe in 1976. And it was assumed that the people of Aldebaran also came to Earth for the first time at this time, as indicated by fossilized shoe prints around 500 million years old, with a fossilized trilobite crushed by the heel, a primordial crab that lived on Earth at the time and died 400 million years ago. The members of the Vril team were of the opinion that the Aldebaran race landed in Mesopotamia later, when the Earth was slowly becoming habitable, and formed the ruling caste of the Sumerians, who were described as bright, white god men. The Vril telepaths also came to the conclusion that numerology is not only identical to the language of the Aldebarans, but also that Aldebaran Sumerian sounds like incomprehensible German and that the speech frequency of both German and Sumerian is almost the same. Whether these statements about Aldebaran are true is an open question, but the blueprints and technical information that the Vril telepaths received, wherever this information came from, were so precise that they led to one of the most fantastic ideas ever conceived by humans, the construction of the afterlife flying machine. The concept of another science matured, today we would say alternative forms of energy. But it took over 3 years before the project was tackled. In this early phase of the other technology or other science, Professor Dr. W. O. Schumann, Thule and Vril member, gave a lecture at the TH Munchen, from which a few sentences are reproduced here. We know two principles in everything and everyone that determine the things that happen. Light and darkness, good and evil, creation and destruction, just as we know plus and minus in electricity. It is always either or. Defining these two principles specifically as the creative and the destructive also determines our technical means. Everything destructive is of satanic origin, everything constructive is of divine origin. Any technology based on the principle of explosion or combustion can therefore be described as satanic technology. The upcoming new age will be an age of new, positive, divine technology. Source, SS Secret Archives. At the same time, the scientist Victor Schauberger was working on a similar project. Johannes Kepler, whose teachings Schauberger used, was in possession of the secret doctrine of the Pythagoreans, whose knowledge was kept secret and adopted by the Knights Templar. It was the knowledge of implosion, implosion in this case equals the utilization of the potential of the inner worlds in the outer world. The Thule and Vril people knew that the divine principle is always constructive. A technology that is based on explosion and is therefore destructive is against the divine principle. Consequently, they wanted to create a technology that was based on implosion. Schauberger's theory of vibration, principle of the overtone series equals monochord, is based on the knowledge of implosion. In simple terms, one could say, implosion instead of explosion. Using the energy paths of the monochord and the implosion technique, one can reach the area of antimatter and thus the dissolution of the power. In the summer of 1922, the first saucer-shaped flying ship was built, the propulsion of which was based on implosion technology, the Beyond Flying Machine. It consisted of a disc 8 meters in diameter, above which was a parallel disc 6.5 meters in diameter, and below that another disc 7 meters in diameter. These three discs were penetrated in the middle by a 1.80 meters hole in which the 2.40 meters high drive unit was mounted. At the bottom, the central body ended in a conical tip, from which a pendulum reaching into the basement ensured the stabilization of the device. When activated, the lower and upper discs rotated in opposite directions to initially build up an electromagnetic rotation field. It is not known what performance this first flying disc achieved. In any case, experiments were carried out with it for 2 years before it was dismantled and probably stored in the Messerschmitt Works in Augsburg. Financial aid for this project appears under the code JFM in the accounts of several German industrial companies. The Vril engine certainly emerged from the afterlife flying machine, although it was formerly known as the Schumann SM Levitator. In principle, the afterlife flying machine was supposed to generate an extremely strong field around itself and in its immediate vicinity, which would turn the space sector enclosed by it, including the machine and its users, into a microcosm completely independent of the cosmos on this side. At maximum field strength, this field would be completely independent of all surrounding universal forces and influences on this side, such as gravity, electromagnetism and radiation, as well as matter of any kind, and could move freely within any gravitational or other field without any acceleration forces being effective or noticeable in it. In June 1934, Victor Schauberger was invited by Adolf Hitler and the highest representatives of the Vril and Thule societies and worked with them from then on. After this first possible failure, the first so-called German UFO was born in June 1934. Under the direction of Professor Dr. W. O. Schumann, the first experimental circular aircraft, the RFZL, was built on the premises of the German aircraft factory Arado in Brandenburg. On its first and last flight, It rose vertically to a height of around 60 meters, but then began to tumble and dance in the air for minutes. The Arado 196 tail unit attached to control it proved to be completely ineffective. With great difficulty, the pilot Lotherways managed to bring the RFZL back to the ground, jump out and run away before it began to behave like a spinning top, then tipped over and literally shredded. That was the end of the RFZL, but the beginning of the Vril missiles. Before the end of 1934, the RFZ-2 was completed, which had a Vril drive and magnetic impulse control. It was 5 meters in diameter and had the following flight characteristics: optical blurring of the contours as the speed increased and the colored glow typical of UFOs. Red, orange, yellow, green, white, blue or violet, depending on the propulsion level. So it worked, and in 1941 it was to have a remarkable fate. It was used as a long-range reconnaissance aircraft during the phase of the war known as the Battle of Britain, when the German standard Mi-109 fighters proved unsuitable for transatlantic reconnaissance flights due to their short range. At the end of 1941 it was photographed over the South Atlantic as it was on its way to the auxiliary cruiser Atlantis in Antarctic waters. The reason why it could not be used as a fighter aircraft was that the RFZ-2 could only make changes of direction of 90 degrees, 45 degrees and 22.5 degrees due to its impulse control. Some may think it is unbelievable, but it is precisely these right-angled flight changes that are the flight behavior that is absolutely typical for so-called UFOs. After the success of the small RFZ-2 as a long-range reconnaissance aircraft, the Vril company got its own test site in Brandenburg. At the end of 1942, the lightly armed flying disc Vril 1 fighter flew. It was 11.5 meters in diameter, was a single-seater and had a Schumann levitator drive and a magnetic field impulse control. It reached speeds of 2,900 to 12,000 kilometers per hour, could make flight changes at right angles at full speed without affecting the pilots, was weather independent and had 100% space capability. 17 Vril 1s were built, and there were also several two-seater variants equipped with a glass dome. At this time, a separate project, V7, was also developed. Several flying discs were built under this name, but with conventional jet propulsion. The RFZ-7 was built on the basis of Andreasip, a combination of a levitating flying disc with jet propulsion. The development groups Schriever Habermal and Mayad Beza worked on this. The RFZ-7 had a diameter of 42 meters, but was broken during a landing in Spitsbergen. However, a replica RFZ-7 was later photographed outside Prague. In July 1941, Schriever and Habermal built a vertical takeoff round aircraft with jet propulsion, but this also had defects. Another electrogravitational flying gyro with Tachin propulsion was developed, which was more successful. This was followed by the RFZ-7T, built by Schriever, Habermal and Beza and also fully functional. However, compared to the Vril and Hornbuehr discs, the V7 flying discs were more like a kind of toy. Again, the Vril and Hornbuehr discs differed considerably from one another. This was mainly due to the fact that the Vril missiles were manufactured by aircraft manufacturers in their factories and the Hornbuehrs in the submarine shipyards. Therefore, the Hornbuehrs were much more stable, but also heavier, which is irrelevant for an anti-gravity drive. Within the SS there was a group that dealt with the production of alternative energy, the SSIV equals Development Center 4 of the Black Sun, whose main concern was to make Germany independent of foreign crude oil. The SSIV developed the Thule engine from the existing Vril engines and the Tachin converter by Captain Hans Koller, which was later called the Thule Tachinator. The first RFZ-5 was launched in August 1939. It was a medium-armed flying gyro with the strange name Hornbuehr. It had a crew of 8 men, measured 25 meters in diameter, initially reached a speed of 4,800 kilometers per hour and later up to 17,000 kilometers per hour. It was equipped with two 6 centimeters KSK power jet cannons, in rotating turrets and 4 MK-106 and had a space capability of 60%. By the end of 1942, the Hornbu II had also been fully developed. The diameter varied from 26 to 32 meters and the height between 9 and 11 meters. It could transport a crew of between 9 and 20 people, was powered by a Thule tachinator and reached a speed of 6,000 kilometers per hour near the Earth. It was also suitable for space and had a range of 55 flight hours. At that time, there were already plans for the Vril 7 large spaceship with a diameter of 120 meters. It was intended to transport entire crews. A short time later, the Hornbu 2I, the absolute showpiece of all spaceships, was completed with a diameter of 71 meters. It was flown and filmed. It could transport a crew of 32 men, had a flight range of over 8 weeks and reached a speed of at least 7,000 kilometers per hour in the Earth's orbit, according to documents from the SS secret archives, up to 40,000 kilometers per hour. Virgil Armstrong, former CIA member and retired Green Beret, describes German missiles during the Second World War that could land and take off vertically and fly at right angles. They were measured at speeds of up to 3,000 kilometers per hour and had a laser weapon as a gun, presumably the so-called KSK power beam cannon, that could penetrate 4 inches of armor. Professor J.J. Huttack, UFO expert and author of The Keys of Enoch, describes that the Germans were busy building something that the Allies called a miracle weapon system. Huttack got hold of protocols that described two things. 1. The construction of the space city of Peenemünde and, 2. The bringing of the best technicians and scientists from Germany to the USA. Also mentioned was the more detailed investigation of the so-called Foo Fighters, fireballs. The construction and use of such flying objects was already known to the CIA and the British Secret Service around 1942, but was not properly assessed. Foo Fighter was actually the Allies' name for all glowing German flying machines. In particular, there were two inventions that fell under the term Foo Fighters. The Flying Turtle and the Soap Bubble, two completely different things that were considered to belong together by the Allies. The Flying Turtle was developed by the SS Ivan Wiener Neustadt. Its external shape was reminiscent of a turtle shell. They were unmanned flight probes that were intended to cause interference with the electrical ignition systems of the enemy forces. They had advanced klystron tubes built in, which the SS called death rays. However, the effective ignition shutdown did not work perfectly at first. Later, there were further developments of this technology and the UFO expert will be able to confirm that the ignition shutdown, the failure of electrical systems, is one of the typical characteristics of the appearance of a UFO. Wendell C. Stevens, U.S. Air Force pilot during the Second World War, describes the Foo Fighters as sometimes gray-green or red-orange, which came as close as 5 meters to the aircraft and then stayed there. They could not be shaken off or shot down and sometimes forced flight squadrons to turn around or land. A completely different matter were the soap bubbles, often referred to as Foo Fighters. These were simple balloons containing thin metal spirals to disrupt enemy aircraft radar. The success of this idea was probably minimal, apart from the psychological effect. At the beginning of 1943, a cigar-shaped mothership was also planned, which was to be built in the Zeppelin shipyards, the so-called Andromeda device, 139 meters long. It was to transport several saucer-shaped flying ships for interstellar, long-term flights. At Christmas 1943 there was an important meeting of the Vril Society in the North Sea resort of Kolberg. The mediums Maria and Sigrun were also there. The main topic of this meeting was the Aldebaran project. The mediums had received precise information about the inhabited planets and the sun of Aldebaran and work began on planning a trip there. On January 2, 1944 a meeting took place between Adolf Hitler, Heinrich Himmler, Kunkel, Vril Society, and Professor Dr. Schumann, Vril Society, about the Vril project. The plan was to use the Vril 7, a large spaceship named Odin, to reach Aldebaran and through a dimensional channel that was independent of the speed of light. According to the Black Sun documents, the first dimensional channel test flight took place in the winter of 1944. This is said to have narrowly avoided disaster, as photos show the Vril 7 after this flight, on which it looked as if it had been traveling for 100 years. The outer cell paneling therefore looked very aged and was damaged in several places. But the designers of conventional discs, with jet propulsion, had also been active in the meantime. On February 14, 1944, the supersonic helicopter designed by Schriever and Habermehl under Project V-7, which was equipped with 12 BMW 028 turbo units, was test flown by the test pilot Joachim Rohlik in Peenemünde. The vertical climb rate was 800 meters per minute, it reached a height of 24,200 meters and a speed of 2,200 kilometers per hour in horizontal flight. This could also be powered by unconventional energy. However, it was no longer used because Peenemünde was bombed in 1944 and even moving it to Prague was of no use. Because before the flying discs manufactured there were ready for use, the Americans and Russians had occupied Prague. During the occupation of Germany in early 1945, the British and Americans discovered photos of the Hornbu 2 and Vril 1 types as well as the Andromeda device in the SS secret photo archives. President Truman's decision in March 1946 led to the U.S. Naval War Committee granting permission to collect German material on high-tech experiments. Under Operation Paperclip, German scientists working in secret were brought to the USA privately. These included Victor Schauberger and Wernher von Braun. Here is a brief summary of the developments that were to be mass-produced. The first project was led by Professor Dr. Schumann, who worked at the Munich University, and in the course of which 17 disc-shaped spacecraft with a diameter of 11.5 meters were supposedly built by early 1945. Which are said to have taken off on a total of 84 test flights, the so-called Vril 1 fighters. At least one Vril 7 and one Vril 7 large spaceship named Odin, which is said to have taken off from Brandenburg to Aldebaran in April 1945 with some of the Vril scientists and Vril Lodge members after the entire test site was blown up. The second project was under the leadership of the SS IVE, which had three bell-shaped space gyroscope types built in various sizes by the beginning of 1945. The smallest was the Hornbu A, with a diameter of 25 meters, of which two examples were built and made a total of 52 test flights, approximately 4,800 kilometers per hour. Seven examples of the Hornbu II, with a diameter of up to 32 meters, were built and tested on a total of 106 flights, approximately 6,000 kilometers per hour. The Hornbu 2 type was actually already planned for series production. A tender is said to have taken place between the aircraft companies Dornier and Junkers, which was awarded in favor of Dornier at the end of March 1945. The official name of the heavy gyroplane was to be Dostra, equals Dornier Atmospheric Aircraft. The Hornbu 2 with a diameter of 71 meters was only built once and made at least 19 flights, approximately 7,000 kilometers per hour. And in the form of plans there was the Andromeda device, the 139 meters long mothership, with hangars for a Hornbu 2, two Vril I and two Vril 2. There are also documents that the Vril 7 large spaceship Odin, after its completion at the end of 1944 and a few flight tests, is said to have already started its first secret missions, still limited to Earth. 1. Landing at Monsey in the Salzkammergut, with diving tests to determine the pressure resistance of the airframe. 2. Presumably from March to April 1945, the Vril 7 was stationed in the Alpine Fortress for security and strategic reasons, after which it flew from there to Spain in order to fly over and safely drop off important German personalities who had fled here to South America and New Swabia, explanation follows, to secret German bases set up here during the war. 3. Immediately afterwards, the Vril 7 is said to have taken off on a secret flight to Japan, about which nothing further is known. I also find the statements of a former German pilot significant, who claims to have seen various versions of flying discs with his own eyes at airfields and in flight.